We'll get the latest battlefield updates.
The strikes come as Ukraine's defense minister Alexei Reznikov on Sunday said the country was ready for a possible Russian offensive this month.
Plus a look inside a Ukrainian hospital.
The center's goal is to treat soldiers with severe injuries so they can be physically active again and return to a normal life.
And also in the program, a wrap-up of the EU summit in Kyiv and a look at Europeans' public opinion regarding Ukraine. Today's Monday, February 6th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. Ukraine's defense minister is confident Western allies will agree to the country's latest weapons request. Warplanes to fight off Russian forces that invaded nearly a year ago. AP correspondent Charles Della Desma reports.
Defense Minister Alexei Reznikov told a news conference in Kyiv on Sunday Ukraine had already received everything from its wish list to Santa, except planes. He adds, there will be planes too, the question being, what kind exactly? Consider this mission is already completed. So far, Ukraine has won support from Baltic nations and Poland in its quest to obtain Western fighter jets. But several Western leaders have expressed concern that providing warplanes could provoke the Kremlin and draw their countries deeper into the conflict. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
We visit a Ukrainian hospital in a few minutes. Now, though, Ukraine expects a major Russian offensive this month, but Kyiv has the reserves to hold back Moscow's forces, even though the latest Western military supplies will not arrive in time, Ukraine's defense minister said on Sunday. From Reuters, Zachary Goleman produced this story.
Russian missiles struck the Ukrainian city of Kharkiv on Sunday, one of them shattering a residential building. That's according to local officials. One resident, Lyudmila Krylova, said she'd been living in the apartment block for only 4 months after being evacuated from another city. She told Reuters she was at home, there was a strong blast, and furniture fell on her and her friend, who was injured by glass. Another missile struck the city's university. One of the school's directors told Reuters three floors of the building were destroyed. The strikes come as Ukraine's defense minister Alexei Reznikov on Sunday said the country was ready for a possible Russian offensive this month. Ukraine has been readying for a new Russian assault, possibly timed to the one-year anniversary of what Moscow calls a, quote, special military operation, when it sent its forces streaming over Ukraine's borders. Ukrainian fighters managed to force Russia to retreat first from the capital, Kyiv, and later from swaths of occupied territory in the east. But Moscow conscripted hundreds of thousands of civilians into what is expected to be a new campaign. Western allies have pledged weapons to help Kyiv resist the expected attack. Reznikov said some of the hardware isn't going to arrive on time, but stated Ukraine was ready and would be able to hold back the attack. But this German-made howitzer in the Donbass is already in the fight. It's staffed by two Ukrainian brothers who trained in Germany and told Reuters that Russian infantry were creeping forward. Reconnaissance relayed coordinates and the brothers fired at the targets. Between lobbing shells at invaders, they shoot texts to their worried parents, reassuring them both sons are still alive and well.
That's Reuters' Zachary Goleman reporting. The EU summit in Kyiv wrapped up late on Friday. For a look at what was said and some context, I spoke with Sonia Dean. She's deputy EU editor for Politico.
Well, there was this gigantic delegation of European commissioners, more than a dozen, and including Ursula von der Leyen, who is the president of the European Commission, along with Charles Michel, who's the president of the European Council. And so kind of a big deal, first of all, for all of these people to be traveling to Kyiv. And in fact, I read that this was the first EU summit that was held in an active war zone. So that's all kind of a big deal already. But anyway, they talked a lot. They covered a whole range of topics, everything from EU accession to further supply of weapons, to further sanction packages against Russia. But somehow, in the big picture, this was also a very symbolic occasion. It was a very symbolic act for all of these, European politicians to travel and go to Kyiv, and then just stand side by side with Zelensky in front of these rows of European Union flags.
One of the other things to come out of the conference was, in the very beginning, Ursula von der Leyen said that the EU stands with Ukraine. Of course, they're supporting Ukraine financially, militarily, humanitarian aid. What's the mood among the people in the EU? We sort of know the official statements, but you're in Belgium. You work with correspondents all over Europe. How do ordinary European citizens who aren't involved in politics feel about so much of their country's money and energy going to Ukraine?
Well, a very broad, brush to ask about all EU citizens. And I guess I would say that it varies a lot by country.
Well, let me ask a different way then. In your experience, do you see popular support for Ukraine wavering?
Well, let's take the example of Germany, because I think, it's a very big, very important country that I lived there for a long time. And it's also very powerful, economically, and it's also one of the most populous EU country. And there, for example, the general support for Ukraine remains high. However, you see that there is a significant, you saw this around the tanks debate, with Olaf Scholz, Chancellor Olaf Scholz. On the tanks issue, it was about almost half-half in terms of supporting it among the German population. So I think overall there's a general broad support, but there are reasons and sometimes even perhaps good reasons to not want to, let's say, contribute to an escalation. That's one of the arguments of the people who would resist further sending of weapons on the weapons side. Support for refugees is generally as well high. I think that you have to keep in mind that the Ukrainian refugees who have flooded into the EU, it's a different culture. It's much closer to, the European culture, the rest of Europe, let's say, than when you had the migration crisis from Syria, in 2015, 2016, which kind of developed into this gigantic crisis. And we're seeing, in fact, the same numbers of people coming into the EU. But it's a mix. It's from the Middle East and Afghanistan, Pakistan, as well as, Ukraine. And, of course, ongoing from North Africa and so on. So the support from Ukrainian refugees is high, I would say, for sure. And there's been a lot of efforts to, integrate the ones that have stayed, because a lot have come and then gone back, in fact. But you can also see and understand how the infrastructure is strained. That it's not easy for countries, for member states, EU member states, to handle it, especially, the ones that are getting the main streams of refugees. That's Poland, for example. It's been tough there. But despite that, support remains high.
Sonia Dean is deputy EU editor at Politico in Brussels. We reached her at her home in Flanders, Belgium. Sonia, thanks for your time. Thanks for your analysis today.
Thanks so much, Steve, for having me on the show.
Well, for a little while on Sunday night, it looked like Ukraine was about to have a new defense minister. I'm joined by our Kyiv reporter, Anna Chernikova, for the details.
Yeah, Ukraine was very close, actually, to a new minister of defense. Basically, what happened yesterday on Sunday evening, it was an announcement by the head of the biggest Ukrainian party in the parliament that the changes in the military sector ministries would be done, and that it would be a new Minister of Defense and apparently a new head of intelligence, because it was announced that that most probably the current head of intelligence of Ukraine would become a minister of defense. But today in the evening, the parliament representative announced that the changes in the defense sector would not be done anytime soon, at least in the upcoming days. So the decision was changed, and as the representative explained, it has something to do with the upcoming Ramstein meeting and also with the upcoming new assault by Russian forces, which Ukrainian intelligence and Ukrainian experts and also international intelligence are expecting in the next 10 days. So basically, it looks like that that this, you know, decision regarding this top military officials is to be postponed for the moment. But again, this is quite a, you know, rapid developing story. So we will be checking on the updates and update you promptly.
So for now, no changes. What we do know is that later in the program, we're going to hear from you again, where you take us to a hospital to see some new technologies helping wounded soldiers. Can you give us a preview?
So it's quite, you know, a unique story about a very unique hospital, which is located in some place next to Kyiv. It has a very unique technology in terms of robotics. So, and since 2014, Ukrainian soldiers, there are a lot of neurological injuries within the Ukrainian soldiers, and prostheses would not help. So basically, they need this high-tech technology in order to develop their limbs and to get back to normal life. And a lot of patients of these clinics actually are getting back to not only to normal life, but also back to their military duties. And today the story would be about two of those soldiers and about the clinic itself. Really, you know, it's really an inspiring story, especially considering the status of these soldiers when they arrived to the clinic was really, you know, the most serious possible. And now they're actually, you know, they can walk and they actually thinking about getting back to their military duties and to normal life.
One thing that's so interesting about the story is that, well, something happened to you during the reporting of the story. Something happened at the hospital, which TV viewers are going to experience differently from radio listeners. But can you tell us what happened and how that sort of demonstrates what life is like in Ukraine today?
Yes, I think that it's very important, and this is why actually we mentioned this in the story. So while filming, the electricity went off. And this is something that, it's an everyday, you know, story that Ukraine is living through. Also, these critical facilities like hospitals, they also still, even having gasoline generators, they still have to stop their operation for a certain time in order to switch to the generator power. And but at the same time, it demonstrates, so the electricity went off, but everyone just continued to do whatever they were doing. So rehabilitation was not stopped for a minute, and both soldiers and doctors were continued to do their job before the electricity was back. And electricity was back after we left, so it was quite a long time for this outage.
Well, we'll hear that story in just a few moments right here on Flashpoint Ukraine. Anna, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. The war in Ukraine has left thousands of wounded soldiers, many of whom require advanced technologies to heal and return to normal life. Anna Chernikova visited a rehabilitation center near Kyiv where cutting-edge technology and holistic care are giving soldiers hope.
Doctors say 17% of Ukrainian soldiers wounded in Russia's war on their homeland have injuries that require high-tech treatment and solutions. This neurorehabilitation center near Kyiv is providing that, according to its head doctor, It's funded by corporate and private Ukrainian donations, and doctors say it offers cutting-edge care in areas like kinesiotherapy and robotics. Founded in 2014 by a team of military physicians, the center's goal is to treat soldiers with severe injuries so they can be physically active again and return to a normal life. Dr. Alexander Kulik is a neurosurgeon who heads the clinic, which handles some of the most severe cases, and finds hope for even the most catastrophic ones through new approaches.
Fighters often come to our clinic with injuries to various parts of the body. One fighter may have a missing limb, but at the same time, three others are not working. Often, the presence of one prosthesis for our wounded patients does not decide their fate. They all need early technological rehabilitation.
Kulik says that since 2014, the clinic has treated more than 12,000 soldiers. 29-year-old Pavlo Poznansky helped defend Mariupol. He was held by Russia until a much-publicized prisoner swap in September. He suffered 5 bullet injuries, one of which damaged his spinal cord and paralyzed the lower part of his body. After unsuccessful rehabilitation attempts at 3 different hospitals, he arrived here.
I've not yet seen a better approach than in this center, and it gives results. The left leg has started to work. I can now bend and unbend it. I can sit, make some moves. The right leg also starting to respond a little.
For Yaroslav Mudry, who has been defending Ukraine since 2014, the psychological care is also extremely important.
Everyone should have rehabilitation. Psychological, of course, because not all people are adapted to combat. For example, it is easier for me because this is not my first combat action.
The clinic's psychiatrists say it is critical not to erase the soldier's experience, but rather help them come to terms with the trauma, recover, and be ready to overcome future obstacles. While videotaping in the clinic, the power went out, as often happens as a result of Russia's war on Ukraine. But the wounded soldiers, like the clinic, carried on. Anna Chernikova for VOA News, Kyiv.
In response to Russia's war in Ukraine, the U.S. and NATO drastically ramped up defenses across Eastern Europe. In Romania, for example, U.S. troop numbers tripled from approximately 1,000 troops in January of last year to about 3,000 today. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb joined up with some of those soldiers in Romania for a firsthand look at how the closest U.S. troops to the war in Ukraine are holding the line with NATO allies.
Loading in for a flight with the screaming eagles of the 101st Airborne Division. Soldiers who take living on the edge to the next level. Conducting air assault drills out of Black Hawk helicopters on the very edge of NATO territory.
We're the closest U.S. Army formation to the fight in Ukraine right now. We're taking it as close as we can to combat, right? So we're preparing for large-scale combat operations. We're exercising on the ground which we might fight, you know, if we were to have to defend NATO.
VOA joined Colonel Ed Mathidis, the commander of the 101st 2nd Brigade Combat Team, on a Black Hawk ride north along Romania's Black Sea coastline. We pick up speed and fly south under the radar. U.S. and Romanian forces at a training post are learning how to move around in towns and cities, going door to door, clearing buildings. This is the first time the 101st Airborne Division has deployed to Europe since World War II. And Mathidis says they're watching Russian tactics in neighboring Ukraine and adapting their training with partners to what they see on the battlefield.
We just got done with a big series of live fires where we attacked some trench lines that look very similar to what you might see across the border. We've had to shoot down, you know, small unmanned aerial systems very similar to what's flooding the battlefield right now across the border.
This week, soldiers offered their punishing air assault course to partners on European soil for the first time. A course some soldiers have called the 10 toughest days in the Army.
The course was something new for me, for us, for all the Romanians. We don't have such a course in Romania because we don't have the same capabilities. It's a great opportunity to train together, to get better.
What war, it's about life and death. and is that makes the difference between failure and success. So if you want to be successful, we are to be together, to stick together, and build this interoperability.
And this increase of U.S. soldiers in Romania is the new normal, at least for about the next year. The Pentagon recently confirmed that when this brigade leaves, another brigade from the 101st is set to replace them. Carla Babb, VOA News, Mihail Colganicianu Air Base, Romania.
The Olympics is the world's preeminent sporting event, but it's never far from a political controversy. And while the Paris Olympics aren't until 2024, that controversy has already started. For more, I'm joined by Sonny Young, the host of The Sunny Side of Sports on VOA Radio.
Well, Steve, I would say the political controversy has really heated up, especially in the past week or so, especially comments coming from top Ukrainian officials. They've been adamant that they don't want Russian or Belarusian athletes competing in Paris next year. As things currently stand, the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, is planning to let Russian and Belarusian athletes compete under a neutral flag. But it does appear, Steve, that Ukraine has the support of the Baltic states in basically saying they are not planning to compete if Russian athletes, whether they're neutral flag or not, whether they're in Paris next year.
Now, the boycotts, when they happen, they punish the athletes, but the athletes aren't the ones making the political and military decisions on the battlefield. So how do the governments justify not going to the Olympics and not letting their own citizens compete when they might have a great chance at a medal that they've been training for years?
I think that's a great point, Steve. The athletes, in the end, are the ones who suffer. That being said, I think you can find some top Ukrainian athletes who very much support a boycott if Russia is allowed to compete next year. I'll give you one example. He's no longer active, Vladimir Klitschko, former world heavyweight boxing champion, and also a past Olympic champion in the super heavyweight division. He's been very vocal that Russia should not be allowed to compete at the Olympics next year. So I do agree with you. I think the athletes are the ones who bear the brunt of this. But in terms of the Ukrainian athletes in particular, Steve, I think they would support a boycott.
Either a boycott or not letting the Russians compete. How big a deal would that be athletically? Are there front runners for any particular sport among the Ukrainian or Russian teams?
I think the Russians are almost always, if they're not near the top of the medal table, Steve, they always send very good athletes to the Olympics. So they would suffer, but the political turmoil now because of what's happening in Ukraine, it's really going to be hard for, I believe, for some of these nations to ignore it when it comes to the Olympics.
VOA's Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. Sonny, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Steve. And sporty greetings to all your Flashpoint Ukraine listeners.
And sporty greetings right back at you, Sonny. Thanks for everything.
Thank you, Steve.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington. Bum, bum, boom, zip. DC.